You're listening to a podcast on the Black Fur Network.
Episode 39, Realmoat. When Realmoat was released from prison on the 1st of July 2010, he didn't waste any time in seeking his revenge on his ex-partner. Moat's actions would spark a manhunt, and his rampage would continue for 10 days. And now we'll discuss crimes like these. Hello and welcome to Crimes Like These with me, SJ.
Me, Paul.
And me, Sam.
It's episode 39. It's Realmoat. How are we? Good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, not too bad.
All well. Yeah. Any DIY, Paul?
I finished the toilet. Yeah. The toilet eventually.
What's the next project?
I'll probably do the hallway that I've been putting off for 8 years. The upstairs one. Because yeah, all the plaster's blind beyond the wallpaper.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah, so it's like a real big job because like when I pull the wallpaper off, plaster's all going to come with it. And I've never plastered in my life, so that should be fun.
Watch loads of YouTube videos, you'll be
fine.
Yeah,
that's what I'm going to
do.
Yeah, you'll be fine. And is this wallpaper from when you moved in?
Oh, way before that, yeah.
So you don't kind of know what's behind that and what's behind that. It's like one of those where it's like, could just be layers of... Random.
Oh, it's wallpaper under, like, embossed wallpaper under layers of paint.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
Embossed wallpaper is a bitch.
Yeah. It is, yeah.
Hence the reason I've put off doing it.
And it's super, and that stuff's super thick as well.
It is, yeah. It's going to be a nightmare.
Oh, it's going to be like chipboard getting that shit off.
Yeah. Which is in the bedroom, chip. On one wall, chipboard wallpaper.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a massive wall. I mean, you've never seen a bedroom as big as our bedroom. It's massive. Like we've got a big double bed in there, plus like drawers and wardrobes and stuff like that, plus a sofa.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and the TV and Blu-ray and everything. Like there's basically another living room set up in the bedroom.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah. But anyway. I'm saying, like, I've got a massive house. I haven't. That's most of the
second
floor.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The other two rooms.
Paul's
it's like
tight. Three floors.
Never seen a bedroom bigger than my bedroom.
And I couldn't make that sound even posher because I'm sitting in the studio right now. And
I'm sitting in the studio. Oh, wow. Humble brag.
Otherwise known as the box room in my house.
It's the recording studio.
Yeah.
Excellent. Anybody watching anything? We've been watching Barry.
I haven't started that yet. Well, I have. Not the new series.
We've managed to binge. I mean, I think it's only like six episodes a season, and the fourth season is on at the moment. So it's like episode a week. But we've binged three seasons in just over 2 weeks. Well,
it's
just under 2 weeks.
Mm.
And it's really good. It's so funny.
Yeah,
imagine,
it's absolutely brilliant.
Imagine like... kind of like Breaking Bad, but less sort of, not less traumatic. It's just really, really funny. Like, they just like kind of stumble from situation to situation. He's clearly got severe PTSD from like being in the Marines. And it's just hilarious that he just ends up like in this acting class.
Yeah, just happens to be really good at killing people.
Yes, because he's a hit. Because for context, he's a hitman. It's Bill Hader, Stephen Root, who is also really, really good in it.
Yeah,
Henry Winkler. Yeah, who is the acting teacher. And he's really good in it as well.
Excellent. He's excellent.
But I highly recommend Barry. I wasn't sure about it at first. It takes a few episodes to get used to like the dynamic of it because it is quite jarring. But it's really good, really funny.
Interesting. Good.
Oh, we watched Dungeons, the new Dungeons.
Oh, it's
Dragons.
Great.
It's so good.
Sarah
doesn't agree.
Well, I've never played D&D before. No, I've never played it. I've always wanted to, and I've never had those kinds of friends, like when I was growing up.
I want to play D&D. I've never played it before.
Excellent. Maybe we should get a team together, because Sam's quite happy to be Dungeon Master, so because he's played it a lot. And we were watching it last night, and I'm like, is it supposed to be this ridiculously camp?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can
okay,
see
that's
that.
Fine then.
Yeah. It's just that,
as long as it's supposed to be like this, then that's fine.
Because if you kind of take a step outside any D&D game and kind of just watch it from the outside, it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a mishmash of things and, like, imaginations and people's personalities.
Sam watches a YouTube series called Critical Role.
Oh, yeah, Critical Role, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously the Dungeon Master is Matt Mercer, who is he's like a voice actor, and most of the people that play, they're also voice actors. And, like, he showed me clips from that before, and I'm like, this game is ridiculous. Like, they're all, like, playing characters and they put on voices and things like that.
Oh, yeah, we never did that.
It's kind of like... almost like theatrics. It's like almost like a theatre group.
People get
isn't
so
it?
Into it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, don't they?
I mean, that's where like LARPing came from.
I was going to say it's like it LARPing, but less physical, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah,
does he listen to you know Brian Posehn, the comedian? He's an actor.
I know the name, but I can't remember what he looks like.
You'd know him if you saw him. He's in loads of things.
Yeah,
like he's quite unusual. He plays and he's got a podcast where they just play D&D on the podcast. And it's so funny. Oh, I can't remember what it's called though. I've not listened to it in a while.
Oh, when you find it, text me that, because I'll see.
Yeah, I'll message
you.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's really good. Got real nerdy, didn't it?
That got real nerdy real fast. Sorry. Sam, what about you?
Exciting? Whatever. Not really. I can't really think. I'm so tired. Little one's teething at the moment, so yeah.
Oh no.
Been watching the second season of The Social Media Murders. It's on ITV.
Oh yeah.
Oh, what's this?
So the first season was the one that had you know the Molly McLaren case covered.
Yes.
That's where I learned about that from there, and there was a couple of other ones, and then they've just done a season two. And that's really good. I think we're on episode three of season two at the moment. Which I can't think of the names. I know the girl's name is Bianca, and basically her boyfriend murders her but puts pictures up on the internet and then phones the police and he's like, I've murdered my girlfriend. And that's just kind of as far as we've got at the moment.
Oh,
so
that sounds familiar.
Yeah, wow. I thought that I'm sure I listened to a Sword and Scale episode that covered this literally last week or the week before. Like the episode wasn't, but I listened to that episode 2 weeks ago. But there are some differences because they're saying the picture was tweeted, whereas on the Sword and Scale episode, they're saying it was on Discord. So I'm just waiting to see if it is the same case, basically. Mm. So that's really good. We've watched the Realm Out.
The drama. Oh,
yeah.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was. To be fair, it pretty much follows. It pretty much follows what people are going to hear very shortly. But less,
spoiler alert.
Yeah, but a lot less detail than I'm sure what we're going to give, to be honest. It's like there's no background on him or anything. Yes, well, we've just been told how many pages of notes you've got. So high hopes here, Paul.
There is, yeah.
It's pretty much just the timeline though, isn't it? It's like a lot of it's just timeline. So it's like...
Yeah. Pinpoint. Yeah, I think there was a few things kind of missed out about it, but it was quite good. The people that I assume they've gone with the actors more for their acting ability because they didn't really look like them. Because I forgot what he looked like, and then when I was researching, I was like, oh, yeah,
yeah,
I was like,
I know the guy who plays him in the drama series is quite good looking, and obviously Valmo, not so much.
Yeah, because I was like, I don't remember him being all right looking, and then I saw pictures and I was like, that's why, because he wasn't. So not in my opinion, anyway. So he wasn't for me, but yeah. So we watched that. I think that's right. Oh, I did watch The Whale.
Oh,
what did you think?
I've not seen it.
I already know because you said in the group chat, but I'm just. I loved it. You know,
it did make me a little bit teary.
Yeah,
and I did love how it was filmed, like how it was shot and stuff. Yeah, and that's how I was like, oh, it's a. I didn't realize it was based on a play.
I didn't until you said.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
I was like, this is acted like it's a play. There was a lot of like sitting down and then all of a sudden getting up and then stomping over to one side of the room and then stomping over to another. And I was like, this is like watching a play.
Yeah.
And then it said it at the end. And I was like, that's why. So I thought that was really good. They stuck to that.
Yeah.
That origin. But nice. I really liked it. It was really good. I thought that pretty much everyone acted really well in it. That's good.
Excellent. Yeah, I do have it on my watch list. So yeah, I will be hopefully watching that very soon. Yeah.
Have a comedy ready for afterwards.
Yeah, it is heavy.
I
think I watched it the day before my birthday and I was like, oh great. No.
Oh yeah.
And then tomorrow I'm gonna be 35. Yay.
Still a baby.
I don't feel like a baby.
Yeah, once you're at 35, it goes like that. Don't you worry about it. You'll be 40 before you know what's happened.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You've got a few years to go until you're in the 40s club. You're all right.
Yeah, a few really quick years. They'll go so fast.
Paul, you're not supposed to say things like that.
Even more so now you have a child.
I think it goes fast. I think it feels like it goes faster when you have a child, though, because all you're focused on is their milestones. So it's like, oh, my God, like, he's going to be 9 months this month. And you're like, where has that gone? So all you're doing is focusing on that. And then you're like, oh, it's my birthday and a year has just gone. And so I can imagine it's just going to feel like nothing. But at the same time, kind of irrelevant. As much as I had a really lovely birthday. I was all of a sudden just like, shit, it's my birthday tomorrow.
I'm always like that.
Oh, yeah, do you just
not everything.
I still get quite excited.
Yeah, Duffy does. Like Duffy loves a birthday.
Yeah.
I don't know, really. It's just not saying I don't really think about it that much.
I think men don't get as bothered, though.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's, men don't tend to get as excited. Bothered.
Yeah, Nick doesn't really. Not make a big effort for it and stuff, but he doesn't anticipate it.
I don't care.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Stranger.
Right then, shall we dive right in to the world of Realmote?
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go.
Realmote was born on June 17th, 1973, in Northumberland, England, which, for anyone that doesn't know, is like, see, sort of past Midlands. It's north, isn't it? Or it's Northumberland.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, he's got a Geordie accent, so you're talking like near Newcastle way. So you're talking, we're talking northeast England, basically.
So it's in the north of England. And I mean, the people up the north of England, they're a gritty folk. They're hardy. They work hard.
Yeah,
reputation for partying hard. They're all bricklayers in Germany.
Yeah, shorts and t-shirt, no matter what the weather.
Yeah, like a tough people. Yeah,
yeah.
So he was born to obviously a mother and father whose names for some reason haven't written down. Did anyone write the names down?
His mother was Josephine Moat. He never knew his father, but it turned out that his dad was Peter Blake, and he was actually born in Birmingham and moved to Northumbria in the early 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't get on with his stepfather like his mother remarried. He didn't get off his stepfather. His mother was mentally ill. You can tell I don't have any interest in the younger life of Realmote. Right?
You really don't, do you?
No. Like, I do like a backstory. I like it. you know, evil villain origin story.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. But he just didn't really have that much of a remarkable childhood, I didn't think. He was getting in trouble. He was a young offender. He was just doing silly things, same as a lot of kids do.
He liked to torture animals.
But that's what we get. That's where we get to sketchy territory, yeah.
But his mum wasn't really. I mean, his mum wasn't great. And I know she was healthy. She was, but
yeah, big time.
She wasn't very nice to her sons.
No, and he obviously had. Was Angus older or younger? Older? No, younger.
Younger?
He was younger, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So his brother Angus.
I assume he's still alive.
He turned out all right because he went down. He became like really academic and really clever and stuff like that, whereas Raoul Moke, you know, literally went in the opposite direction.
It's not even like it was a lack of focus or anything. It's just literally like the brothers decided to be polar opposites on what they focused on. So Angus was like very studious, whereas Raoul was very physical. Like he wanted to go and put all of his efforts and energy into that route, whereas his brother didn't. And they did end up, considering they had the same upbringing, they ended up very different people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good argument for like the whole nature nurture thing, really.
Very good, yeah.
Yeah,
very
that's good. True.
And he went to live with his grandmother at a young age, didn't he? But he literally lived like a few doors away from his mom and stepdad. Yeah.
He was always constantly looking for his father.
They're here for you, Paul.
I was going to say.
We've been tapped.
I just wanted to make a guest appearance.
It's railed mode.
What was you going to say, Paul?
So, yeah, he was constantly looking for his real father.
Like, yes, he was.
His whole life, yeah.
Yeah. He did. He made up a fantasy, didn't he? About he created a fantasy where he said that he was born in France and his dad was a French guy.
Yes,
like really random.
That was a thing with him anyway. Like a lot of these people, he did lie a lot.
Yeah, and I think that feeds into the whole ego thing, doesn't it? You know, when he's older, because obviously, as he gets older. You know, after he leaves school, he starts getting into like karate and bodybuilding and things like that. And he obviously ends up taking steroids and he was obsessed with how he looked and he wanted to be like a physical presence. He wanted to be, you know, really man, you know, butch and
stuff. He had that kind of military buzz cut haircut.
I mean, he was ginger, though.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Well, strawberry blonde.
Yeah, strawberry blonde, I'd say, yeah. It was
one of the most, like, gingery-looking ginger people I've ever seen, like. He's, like...
He's got ginger features as well, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
May I take this opportunity to just apologise to all the ginger people? Sam's opinions are not the opinions of the crimes like these podcasts.
I don't mean it that way. I just mean, like, it's stereotypically, I guess. Yeah, nothing against gingers. Please don't
sweeping generalizations here about ginger people.
People know when I speak, that's just the way it is. Tune out. They're like, oh, here she goes again. Like he had a perception of what a man should look like, didn't he? Yeah. And that's what he wanted to adhere to. Like that's why he was like, it's like that whole male gaze thing, isn't it? He was very much his idea a man should look like. That's the route he went down. Bigger and bigger and bigger and, like you said, buzz vests. Cut and, There was one picture where he was wearing makeup, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that surprised me. Was he, because I know he was a bodybuilder, was he like a competitive bodybuilder?
No, I mean not makeup. I mean, like...
Oh.
I'm sure it's it was like blue eyeshadow and red lipstick.
It's for a man to wear makeup.
Oh, it's nothing against that. That's absolutely fine.
But you wouldn't have expected to find a photo of him with makeup on.
Yeah, because he was so, like, just that whole I don't know, male.
Masculine, yeah.
Yeah, he did bouncer work as well, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. And back in those days, sort of, there's a lot of people that gravitated to door work were sort of your big, beefy, got a reputation guys, not people that could actually defuse situations.
With a penchant for violence, shall we say, that, you know, are looking for any excuse to, you know, beat somebody up, basically.
He was fond of pushing his weight around, a bully, as Paul comes
he's got a bully look about him, though, hasn't
definitely
he?
Has
he
yeah
does,
although,
yeah
although I know people that look a lot like that and are not bullies at all, so
I mean, I used to know a guy who was like, you know, 6'7", absolutely built like a brick shit house, and he was a pussycat. Like, he was the softest guy, had the biggest heart. Wouldn't, you know, I've never seen him get angry or be physical with anybody. And he always seemed to be a target for lads looking for a fight, though, because, like, we used to go out to pubs and clubs. Yeah, because, like, lads would, like, try and pick fights with him, like, at a bar and things like that, because of his size, to try and, you know, coax him into a fight and things like that. And he just
fucking always ridiculous.
I know, yeah. And, like, he was always like, mate, I'm just here for a night out. Yeah, like, leave me alone, kind of thing.
Stresses me out, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And he always just, like, took it in his stride and...
It's like apes trying to fight for, like, the top spot.
It is,
Like, you're bigger than me. I need to show that I'm fiercer than you. It's fucking stupid.
Yeah, it is ridiculous, yeah. You get it in, and, like, you get it all the time on the road. Like, driving, you get that all the time.
Yeah. Mm. No, that's true. That's true. Even though, like, he was, like, quite... he wanted to obviously show that he was, like, quite... no one to be messed with, basically. So one to not be messed with. And then ended up doing what he'd done, which was horrendous. But initially, people described him as quite sensitive.
Yeah.
Which I was
surprised about.
Yeah.
Actually, I will say that comes a point later on where I agree and even sounds that way.
Hmm.
We'll get to that anyway.
Okay.
Working on the doors in 2004 is where Roe met Samantha Stobart. Who fell in love with, who was much, much younger than him.
Much younger, yes.
I like this pedo vibe.
She was, what, I think 17?
Yeah, I think so.
I read 16.
Oh, really?
So I read that they met when she was 16, but started dating, and I'm saying that in inverted commas, when she was 17, and he was mid to late 20s.
Yeah.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is super creepy.
Massively.
Yeah.
Anyway, they were together. He was madly in love with Samantha, like, worshipped her, apart from when he was beating her and abusing her.
Yeah.
Which he did regularly.
Yeah.
They had two children. No, they had two children.
They had a daughter.
A daughter. Who he loved the kid. He was always wanting to be a father, so always wanted to be a good father, particularly.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship eventually broke down in 2010 after another violent incident where she had to leave and escape. And then shortly after that, he was imprisoned for assaulting a family member.
Who was 9 years old.
Yeah, who was 9 years old,
Which is just ridiculous. Like, the size of him compared to a nine-year-old child.
Yeah.
Bodybuilder, will remind you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I mean, he hasn't got to use a lot of force to, you know, be violent with anybody, particularly a child. So. I mean, I didn't go into the details of that particular incident that landed him in jail, but doesn't look good.
No.
Does it?
But, I mean, this is now that he's now started. Now he's been in prison for, he got a 16-week sentence for the assault, of which he served just over 2 months.
Yeah.
So a little over half his sentence, which is the way in British law, if you don't know, as soon as you're sentenced, the minute you get into prison, that sentence is basically halved. Like, if you get on with it and just do, you know, what you're supposed to do, you're quiet, you will get out in literally half the time you're sentenced for, which is astounding.
And obviously they'll always count time already served, like while it was in custody before it's gone to court and everything.
Or even so on house arrest.
Oh,
a tag or whatever.
Jesus.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
He was where did we get to? Yeah, he served 2 months. While he was inside, he was stewing basically about Samantha being outside, having broken up with him. He had a daughter, he didn't want other men near or anything like that.
She basically said she didn't want anything to do with him, didn't she?
Unfortunately, she'd started dating a Christopher Brown, a karate instructor, weirdly, from the local, and a car salesman.
Oh, was it?
I don't know. I don't know why I wrote that. It doesn't even say car, I don't think. they were seeing each other. She decided, and I'm not victim blaming here, even though the way I just said she might suggest it. Maybe a little bit, but I'm not. She thought it might be a good idea to tell Royal Moat while he was in prison that her new boyfriend was a police officer.
I think her reasoning was going to be a deterrent.
Yeah.
Because I think she knew that as soon as he gets out, he's going to come for her.
And you can see why.
And absolutely, And, you know, he's going to want contact with his children and things like that. Obviously, she doesn't know that he's been sat stewing about her breaking up with him. But, yeah, she obviously had in the back of her mind that he's going to want contact with her. And I think that's why she said that Chris was a policeman. Little did she know that Raoul had a absolute vendetta against
the
Northumbria police.
Hated them.
Fathom this obsession. That it was an obsession for him, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's like he's one of these, though, that whatever anything bad that happens to him is someone else's fault.
Yeah.
Like, he never takes responsibilities for any of it. So the fact that he ends up in prison, it's like, you were after me. You were looking for something. You targeted me. You.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the same with anyone in his life, really. He blames other people and never looks at himself. And I think that's where it come from. And obviously Samantha wasn't to know that.
No.
That's just a really unfortunate sort of twist of fate that he had such a dislike for the police, and she used that as reasoning to keep him away from her.
Yeah, and they didn't tell her when he was released either, did they?
No. She got no warning whatsoever.
She got no warning.
I don't think anyone assumed that he was as dangerous as he turned out to be, though.
That's true. Like, I think they underestimated him.
Massively so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't think anyone even estimated him. At 11 a.m. on the 1st of July 2010, Royal Moat was released from his sentence from Durham Prison. Sorry, I did say that.
Yeah, Durham Prison.
Immediately after he was released, he started to stockpile weapons and ammunition. This is the same day.
He made his own shotgun bullets, didn't he?
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? Why would you do that?
Because ammunition is hard to buy.
Yeah. He modified shotgun ammunition. So
Yes, he did.
Yeah, so he replaced
the casings and he replaced the bearings
with bigger bearings.
Because
basically it's easy to source a gun illegally, but it's not easy to source ammo illegally because that can be traced back to someone. So that's why he done that.
And he'd got a sawn off shotgun, hadn't he?
Yeah, it's always a sawn off, isn't it?
Always a sawn off. Sticking
down your trousers easy.
Yeah.
So this is where the incident really starts now. 2:30 a.m. on July 2nd, which is essentially the same day he was released that night.
Yeah.
Moat went to his ex's house and shot and killed her new partner, who was outside the house at the time.
He followed them.
Yeah.
Yeah, he followed them because they were, I think they were somewhere else. Because
a party, yeah.
Yeah, that was it. There was at a party at a neighbour's house.
Yeah, and they left early.
And he was in the van with his friend Carl Ness, who was incidentally driving a stolen white van, yeah, as you do. Mm. I mean, already being in the stolen vehicle the day after you've been released from prison, I think he's breaching his bail conditions there already. Yeah. And this is before he's even done anything. But yeah, he shoots Chris in the back twice, I think, and he shoots him in the back of the head point blank. So he goes, when he goes down face down, he walked over to him and then shoots him in the back of the head.
Yeah, he makes sure, he was dead.
Yeah, and then he turns to Samantha and shoots her. I think she's shot. I think he shoots twice, but one misses her, but the other one doesn't, and the other one does get her.
He shoots her directly through the window.
Yeah.
Like a double glazed window.
Yeah. Which is just insane.
Because he said, like skipping ahead, but he didn't want to kill Samantha. I'm not too sure that that's
true. I'm not sure about that. Because he said
the reasoning was, like, he just wanted to basically just ruin her life rather than actually kill her.
Yeah, he said he wanted to, like just maim her body so she didn't have like the confidence to have future partners and things like that. Yeah.
Are you randomly shooting through a window if you only plan on maiming someone?
Exactly.
I think because he tried to kill her, didn't end up killing her. I think it was a dent to his ego. And I think he couldn't deal with that. And he was like, I'll just make out that I actually intended on doing that. Because he didn't want the embarrassment of actually not.
Yeah.
Mm. I think personally.
And the whole thing's about ego, really.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Incidentally, he has to flee the scene on foot because his getaway driver in the stolen white van just drives off, which I find hilarious.
It's like
it is his mate.
Situation,
so his mate
set up.
his mate drives off, leaving him to flee the scene on foot.
Yeah,
it is brilliant. Really, like, just to sort of reiterate though, it's such a quick turnaround, really, though, isn't it? Like, he's absolutely like he's intended to do it. I'm not saying that he's like had that he's not aware of his actions. He fully is aware, but it's very like fast, like the getting obviously of the guns and the ammunition, getting his mates involved, the fact that it happens on pretty much the same day as his release.
He was preparing this before he was released. Ness was visiting him in jail where Moat was saying, was getting him to get a certain other person to visit him in jail. He wasn't named because he's the one that could get him a 6-wheeled car.
Oh.
Which is code, they say, for a gun.
Ah, right, okay.
Oh,
so he was preparing. Yeah, he was preparing this before he left jail, prison.
Wow, that just shows you the level of obsession and the level of that. You know,
I think he started planning it the minute he was sent
down. The minute
he went,
got sent down. Yeah.
He was well up for it. Anyways, no one hears anything. Like, obviously, this starts a big manhunt because there's a man loose with a gun. No one hears anything again from Rail for 3 days. And at 29 minutes past midnight on the 4th of July, Moat made a chilling phone call to Northumberland Police saying, and this is where I said earlier about him being sort of soft, not soft, but like,
I know what you mean. He sounds relatable.
Yes.
Like the way he comes across on that 999 call, he sounds a bit broken, in all honesty.
He does.
He's very sort of, look, and he's literally like addressing the police. He's like, Northumbria police have always been after me. You've never let up. You've just been on at me all the time for years and years and years. And I've had enough. I'm coming. And he literally says something like, not verbatim, but he says something like, I'm coming for you.
That's literally what he says. He says, I'm not on the run. I'm coming for you. Yeah,
that's what he says.
But he does say when he, because obviously the first thing he does is admit to killing.
Yeah, he does. He admits.
Christopher. Christopher Brown.
Yeah.
He says, the way he said it just made me, it was strange. He said, the gentleman I killed earlier, you're one of your guys, the police officer. But he referred to him as the gentleman he killed earlier.
It sounds like almost respectful.
Yes, it does.
Which is, doesn't correlate with,
it's almost like he's phoning up the council to say that he's ran over one of their bins.
Good analogy. I like that a lot.
It's a weird way he says it, because
it is,
and I know this is going to sound strange, but for me the Geordie accent,
I think it's very comforting
because my parents were big fans of Alvida Saint Pet when I was young. And like, so when I was growing up in my house, Alvida Saint Pet was on a lot.
So you find comfort in that accent.
So I find comfort in it. Yeah, I just find for some unknown reason to me, the Newcastle accent reminds me of my dad. Even though my dad, as far as I'm aware, never even been to Newcastle, he's certainly not from there.
Well, it's funny because my sister-in-law is from South Shields, so she's got a Geordie accent.
Yeah.
And my niece and nephews have got Geordie accents as well. And even, you know, my brother who's lived up there for, because he lives just outside of Durham.
Yeah.
Like he's been up there for 9-10 years. And it's weird, like when he talks to me, he goes back Brummy, but his accent is basically peppered with Geordie like mannerisms and things. Because like I'll talk to him and he'll go, "You're right," and he goes, "Aye." You know what I mean? Just like little things like that, and it's so strange. But
yeah,
I agree with the Geordie accent thing. It is a very sort of soothing, soft.
It's trustworthy. It's a trustworthy accent.
Yeah,
trustworthy.
I agree.
Like,
yeah,
I would just believe something a Geordie told me. Like it could be like raining hard, and you go, "Oh, beautiful day, this sun," and I'd be like, "Yeah, it is, isn't it? It is a beautiful day, this sun." That's how trustworthy that.
I would definitely agree with that. Yeah, but yeah, that the 911 call is incredible to listen to, because
it is,
like you say, he just sounds
matter of fact.
Yeah, and he's just like, "Look, this is what I've done. This is why I've done it, and I'm coming for you."
Yeah,
because I've done enough.
The tone of his voice is even almost, "Look, I don't even want to be doing it. I just have to now."
Yeah, that is the tone. You're absolutely right there. Yeah,
yeah. I've just realised that I've got more sympathy for Rail Moat than I probably should have.
Like, yeah. I mean, that's a strong word, sympathy.
It's a strong word. It's that goddamn accent, man.
He could be telling you anything, Paul. He'd be like, I'm going to come over there. I'm going to blow your head off with this shotgun. And you'd be like, "Aw."
I believe you.
Yeah.
So this is the same night. Earlier that evening, traffic officer PC David Rathband started his shift. David was a keen cop, so to speak. He loved his job, like was known to be a go-getter, like a big, you know, a good arrester. Yeah. I don't know if that's a term that the police use, a good arrester.
He was really experienced, though. He'd been in the role for quite a while, hadn't he?
He was really good. All round a good guy to work with. Everyone liked him. Everyone trusted him. He would, like, you know, he would cover shifts for people. He was just generally a good guy. He was parked up on one of his, like, the police's, like, park ups, for want of a better word, off the motorway, like their little on ramp things. Just waiting, like, watching the cars go by. He knew about this situation, obviously, as all cops do. He was looking out for a specific vehicle. Unknown to him, Moat had changed cars and was now travelling in a black Lexus.
So, yeah, this was his mate's car, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He'd got the two guys to help him, hadn't he?
Yeah, where were they? One of them was...
I can't remember the guy's name.
I've got it here somewhere. Good Lord. Carl Ness and Karama White.
That's it. That's it. Carl Ness was one of them, which was the guy in the van at the beginning.
So anyway, unbeknownst to Officer Rathband, who was parked up, Moat had spotted him.
Yeah.
Noted he was by himself, a police officer, sat in a rather secluded area. No one could really see there. It was just off the motorway. So he left the motorway off the on-ramp and parked on it. So he didn't actually quite leave the motorway. He just parked on the off-ramp. As we now know, he got out of the car while the others remained in the car, walked around to the side of the patrol car and fired twice.
Yeah.
At point blank range, straight at
into
PC
his face.
Straight into his face.
Yeah. He was blinded by the first shot because of the flash from the muzzle. And he ended up playing, I think he played dead.
He did,
didn't he?
He did. Yeah. Imagine being shot though and having
Jesus.
When I heard that, I was like, to not like be whimpering in pain and all the rest of it, like it
that just shows how trained he was.
Yeah,
because I think he probably knew if he moved or whimpered or anything, he was going to fire again to make sure he was dead.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you imagine the presence of mind though.
I don't know if I
would just go into panic mode and just try to get away.
I think most people would, but he had long-term damage. I think he lost his one of his eyes, didn't he?
He lost both. He lost sight in both.
Oh, was it both?
Yeah, he was fully blind. No, he was fully blind. Jesus. So he radioed, didn't he? Through. So he like obviously after Raoul left the scene, he then radioed to say, which obviously gave the police a location of where Raoul was.
Yeah. But then immediately, pretty much, Moat called the police again himself.
Yeah.
To tell them that he'd shot an officer and that basically they would have to kill him to stop him. That was the only way they were possibly going to stop him from killing every police officer he came across.
I think he knew that he weren't going to get out of it alive, and that's why he was going down swinging, basically.
Yeah, I don't think he
was on a rampage.
Yeah, he was always going to.
Rampage.
Well, as we find out, it was probably a surety because he only had one round left, didn't he? So it was a surety that he'd saved that for himself.
Mm.
It was around this time that the police received two separate phone calls that suggested Moat had two hostages with him. This would be Carl Ness and Karama White.
Yeah.
Who obviously
were not hostages in the slightest. Although they did protest that they did stuff under duress.
Yeah. But I mean, they went shopping in Tesco's for him, bought barbecue sauce. And
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Just fucking ridiculous. Didn't bring him chicken and lager though, did they?
No, well, not yet. Not they didn't.
We'll get to that.
My favourite bit of this whole case.
It's so good.
we've got to. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Police were now aware that he was travelling in possession of possibly two hostages. And also they knew that he was now in the Lexus. So they were waiting.
Hi, it's Mike from the After Horror Podcast telling you to listen to the After Horror Podcast. It's for idiots who occasionally talk about the film that we're supposed to be, you know, like doing and stuff. Give it a listen. Well, don't, like, I'm not your dad, but, you know, I think you'd enjoy it.
The search moved to Rothbury Village, which is like a tiny little...
Oh, yeah, it's tiny.
If you're listening from outside of England, when in your mind you hear English village... Whatever you're picturing is what it is.
Yeah.
It's what I picture. Yeah.
All the towns and the villages up in that area of the country, they all look the same. They're all like that.
Yeah, absolutely stunning. They're just old built houses and shops and squares. They're so old, like they're old. Beautiful anyway. I love places.
Yeah,
it is.
They're
very pretty too, is it?
Yeah. It's my dream one day. To live in one of those little villages. Or just on the outskirts of one. I don't want to live in the village because people.
Yeah.
So people. they they moved to Rothbury because they, well, basically they'd had intelligence that he was very, very familiar with Rothbury. Like he would holiday there, he would fish there, he would shoot guns there. So he was very familiar with the area. By this point, the manhunt had reached unprecedented levels nationwide, with over 500 police officers surrounding this tiny, tiny, quaint English hamlet.
Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it?
It's madness, yeah.
Yeah, so it was like a tenth of the nation's police force
Really? A tenth? That seems like a very few for it to be a tenth of the country's.
It was something like a tenth. I heard it on one of the podcasts that I listened to, it might have been a documentary. It was something like a tenth of the nation's police force was like.
Wow, we have a tiny police force. That's what I'm taking from that. Jesus Christ! Wow, public service funding, eh?
Yeah, that's it.
Wow. Oh yeah. So at this point, it became obvious to everybody that the hostages were in fact accomplices, and were driving around Moat like. He was a little chauffeur guy because they were all on CCTV all together. Just going around.
They'd got them everywhere, hadn't they? Yeah,
doing the little shopping and stuff.
Making sure he'd got something to eat and drink. Because they found out he'd got campsites like all over the place, hadn't he?
Yeah. He's hiding in a storm drain.
Yeah, hiding in a storm drain. Because not only did they enlist their, obviously, you know, a massive police presence, and they cordoned off something like a 2 mile like block, didn't they, like an exclusion zone almost.
He'd completely gone to ground for a couple of days by now as well, like no one had seen him, there was no,
and that's why they enlisted the expert help of tracker Ray Mears.
This is a mental part of the story that I did not know about.
I didn't know that bit.
Ray Mears had an instrumental part in taking down Railmo.
It did. Yeah, that's crazy.
Eat that, Bear Grylls.
Yeah. Like, this manhunt was massive, though, because they also enlisted the military as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they
like,
did, yeah. They had the largest
UK, like the most expensive and largest UK manhunt
they did.
Ever.
Yeah.
This is, like,
it's they insane. Had air support, they had ground units with dogs, they had obviously Ray Mears.
Do you reckon they make a bit more insane. Effort because it was a police officer who was killing?
I think there is that, definitely, because then he's killed or he's planning on killing more of their own. But also, they fucked up, didn't they? The police fucked up and they had to rectify this very quickly.
Yeah, they did.
So they were bringing in everything because there was obviously on the day where Raoul was released, there was a report, wasn't there, drew up that he had mentioned about on several occasions potentially wanting to go and attack his ex, Samantha.
Yeah.
Which did reach the correct police station, but then wasn't actually picked up, picked up, acted on or anything. And then as soon as he got out, he pretty much acted on his fantasy of killing.
Oh, immediately.
There was no sort of no additional time basically for the police to look into any of the reports. And it was like, we fucked up here. Like he's actually acted on it so quickly and they couldn't do it. So I think basically, it was a mixture of that. Like, we need to rectify our fuck up very quickly, and we don't want you killing our colleagues.
Yeah, I mean, if you're willing to kill police officers, then nobody is safe, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
As we come to find out, because on the 7th of July 2010. The day following the arrest of Ness and Wyatt, police discovered a campsite with a dictaphone that had another chilling message for the police. This time, Railmoat had voice recorded onto the dictaphone that he'd been watching the news and was furious that how he was being portrayed, and that for every lie that the media told about him, he would kill one innocent civilian.
Yeah.
Yeah, the media really didn't help here. I lied.
No,
it
they really
so
didn't.
What's the word? I can't say the word.
What's
sensitive.
The word I can't. No.
Uncensored. Do you mean?
No.
What is this?
It's a word I can't pronounce.
What's the context?
About the media.
Yeah. I keep going to say sensationalised.
Sensationalised.
We got there.
Say it again.
Sensationalised.
I can't say it.
Oh, this is like trying to get somebody who's Scottish to say purple burglar alarm. It's hilarious.
Can they not say it?
No, they go purple burglar alarm. They go like that. They can't say brilliant. It. It's dead funny.
Oh, my God, that's a word. There aren't very many words I can't say, and actually can't say that one. Because I can't even say it now, you've just said it. That's ridiculous.
Think of sensation, but sensationalised.
Sensationalised.
There you go.
Okay. Yes, anyway. That. Media sense. Nope. Sensationalised.
There you go.
The whole thing, and they just made everything
They made it worse. Worse. They made it worse, yeah.
Yeah.
Like they really tend to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Because he didn't care about like notoriety for his crimes. This was like, this is one of those rare exceptions where someone is literally just doing it for pure rage reasons. Like there was no glory in it for him. He just wanted to destroy the police.
But then he'd get a lot of support, though, didn't he? He'd had a lot of support when he was in prison from, like, friends and so on and so forth. And
he was
afterwards as well. Like, people were saying, like, that they'd do the same if they were in his situation.
Yeah.
Like, if his ex had... Because he made out that him and Samantha hadn't split up as well.
Yeah.
So a lot of the people that he knew were sort of... You know, saying that they would do the same if his ex was off cheating on him and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And because he had that, I think he started to believe his own bullshit.
Yeah. And they just had to live up to it.
Yeah, I think he obviously knew that she called things off, but had convinced himself that they hadn't, and then people were saying, yeah, right, I'd do the same as
you're
doing.
Oh, that's insane, though.
And I think...
People say that stupid shit all the time. That's one of my big pet peeves with people, when people say, I'd do this and I'd do that. Because you don't know what you would do
in any given situation.
And who the fuck would get... If like, God forbid, Duffy ever cheated on me, I wouldn't kill anybody. I would just sit in a fucking mess in the house for, like, a month.
Because
I got myself together. I know what you'd get on with my life.
I know exactly what you'd do. You'd do what Rob does in High Fidelity. You'd mope about, drink a bit, listen to music for about a month, and then you'd just snap out of it and you'd be fine.
Yeah. I don't know. No. We've been together a long time, 20 years. That's a long time to get over. But yeah, I mean, that's I hate it when people do that. Oh, I'll do this, I'll do that. Oh.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
Yeah, you don't know. But I think
they
fed into it.
Yeah, they do. As a man, you tend to hear that probably a lot more than you do, because you get to hear your friends say things like, oh, I'd smack him, I'd punch him. But I've known you 20 years. I've never seen you hit anyone. Why would you suddenly hit this guy?
Yeah. I don't know. No, like, I've had a lot of... I've been cheated on before, and like people were saying to me that I can't believe that you've reacted this way. I'd be doing this. I'd be doing that. I'd do it. And I was like, okay. And I would like to think that, like, I would love to do those things to both people, but I'm not going to. And so for other people, girls do chip in as well and say some really they do.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't know.
Some really unhelpful comments sometimes, like, oh, you should do this, you should do that. And it's like, why would I waste my energy?
Yeah. It's always stupid as well, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just unhelpful.
Absolutely. So I think people just do say things, just, I don't know. I don't know why just people do it.
For the drama, probably.
Yeah.
And to sound cool.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
But not very cool.
But yeah, if you're someone like, right, you're just feeding his a false belief system. I genuinely think there was an element of him being a little bit deluded, like, you know, the police, you're after me, you're target. No, they fucking weren't. Like, you got arrested and put in prison for something you actually done, mate. They weren't making up shit. They weren't planting evidence on you.
No, you know? Major assault a 9-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. No, if they were going to frame me for something, it would be something probably other than that. But, I think it's just, I don't know. Like I said, he's very much like, blames other people for all the shit that's gone wrong in his life.
Yeah, for sure. So after the dictaphone was found, obviously the police put a media blackout in place, so they weren't allowed to report about it anymore. Like, because they were worried that he would start killing members of the public, because he was already shooting police officers. But they didn't hear anything from, again, for another 12 or so hours. So the 8th of July, 2 days after the arrest of Ness and Wyatt, Moat was still on the run, but now with no access to a car and no money.
Hmm.
So they're thinking he could be getting desperate. He could be like, there was also evidence of him maybe being in people's houses within the village.
Yeah.
One lady said there was a head outline laid in a pillar, but people can get very, what's the word?
Swept up?
Yeah, carried away. People can get a bit excited, and a bit carried away and a bit scared as well. So you go in, you think, oh shit, I don't remember that head, my head dent being in my pillow. Someone's been here and laid in my bed. It must be real.
Is this Goldilocks and the Three Bears or what? Fucking hell.
Yeah, it was definitely not just right because he was no longer there.
Yeah.
There was other things too. Like there was, and obviously there were other things that did seem more likely. Like there was a lot of vegetables, tomatoes and things going missing from people's gardens.
Yeah.
That's what he was living on.
He was on it. He was on his ass.
Yeah.
Tracking him like a bloodhound.
He was there. Mears, his little chubby self, was running around that woodland. They'd also set up like a 2-mile exclusion zone around the village. So,
and where did they do that exactly? Because it was the National Trust at Cragside. Listeners, you need to Google this place because it's absolutely stunning. Cragside is a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place.
People climb there a lot.
So it's not, it's basically like northeast of Rothbury. It's just on the outskirts, but there's a river, there's a big lake, there's a massive stately home at the National Trust place. It's absolutely gorgeous. Cragside is honestly well worth a visit if you go.
Yeah,
and that's where the police operation was holed up.
Wow. Well, I couldn't have asked for better surroundings.
Absolutely.
I mean, they were risked being shot, but, you know, they're in a nice place. So
sure.
Can't moan it too much.
But yeah, Cragside is an incredible place. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I might have to head up there. I've got a National Trust membership.
Oh, there you go. Next time you go to York, you can drop in there on the way back.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Just go a bit further.
So tensions were obviously pretty high in the village. Everyone was scared. I watched a lot of interviews with people, and there was this one old guy that looked like Santa Claus.
Oh.
Yeah, he was brilliant. He was saying about how they were telling everyone to stay in and stay safe. And he was like, people in there with guns. What do you mean? Stay safe. Thanks for that. Good as well. It was around this time that sort of chatter started going around the village about the big storm drains that were in the centre of town, which basically just led off in pipes to everyone's houses.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, this massive storm drain. And it turned out that's where he had been hiding, because there had been evidence of him.
Trying to do a Pennywise, weren't
it? Yeah, absolutely. Well, you imagine him coming up at your toilet?
Oh, my word.
Oh, God.
I don't know what's worse, him or Pennywise, to be quite honest.
It's not to be... No, I'm not going to say it.
Don't say it.
Nothing.
I think she was going to make a comparison between Pennywise and Mr. Moat.
I mean, one's much better looking than the other, aren't they? Really?
I mean, I do have a bit of a thing for Pennywise. I'm joking.
Pennywise is pretty hard.
I don't at all. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
This it is like a, like if this hadn't have happened, you would, and someone told you this story, you'd be like, "Well, you've sensationalised it."
Yeah.
And
we have. How can you run? How can you run for that long in England? It's tiny.
It's very, very, it's very, very flat though in places. Very flat. Yeah, like the Lincolnshire. I went to Lincolnshire. I think it was last year or the year before, and it's so fucking flat. Like I can't.
Well, that's weird.
It's honestly it's bizarre.
We're super hilly around here. I mean, yeah, I live halfway up a valley.
Yeah, it's hilly by me as well. And the Midlands, obviously, you know, it is basically in a valley. It's surrounded by hills and things like that. But I am not kidding you. Go to Lincolnshire because it's so fucking flat. It's ridiculous. Like, you can see for miles. It's so weird. And that was the one thing that struck me when we were driving around. I was just like, everything is just so flat. It's weird. It's just
Holland's
weird.
Like that.
Yeah, Holland. Yeah,
yeah. Holland is creepily flat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just weird. And we haven't even got to the best bit yet.
We're getting there.
Oh, let's get to the best bit because it's so funny.
This is the only reason I wanted to do this one.
I mean, he's another troubled individual, though, at that time, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, 100%.
Seems all right now. So this is all happening on the 8th of July. The net is closing in. They've now found evidence that he was in the storm drain.
Yeah.
The day after, on the 9th of July at 7:25 p.m., a member of the public reports a sighting of a man fitting Moat's description on the banks of the River Cacut in the centre of Rothbury. Police arrive. It was indeed Moat, and a standoff begins.
Yeah.
Where Royal Moat, and this is the first good sentence of this, where Royal Moat then holds himself hostage.
Yep. Yep. With his gun. He's got it pointed at his neck, hasn't he? Is it his neck or under his chin?
Under
or something?
His chin.
Yeah, under his chin. Yeah. And he's laying down as well on the floor.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. I mean,
on his stomach,
and then comes. I mean, obviously negotiations and whatnot, because they talk about, you know, getting his dad in to talk to him, Samantha, but his knight in shining armor, and when I say shining armor, I mean a fluffy dressing gown.
Yeah. Fluffy grey dressing gown.
Fluffy grey dressing gown, or house coat, if you prefer that terminology, which I don't care for at all.
I almost think isn't there a difference between the two, though? Isn't a house coat like more formal? Like a house coat is like the posh ones with like the buttons.
That's what you retire with brandy and a cigar in.
Yeah, and a dressing gown is like where you've got just the belt round the middle, I'm sure.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that the difference?
I believe so, yeah.
I thought it was just like what posh people called a dressing
gown.
Yeah, that's what
I thought.
I could be completely wrong, but I'm sure.
Bathrobe.
Well, a bathrobe's a different thing, isn't it? Because a bathrobe is like a towel with a hood.
Yeah.
And arms.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, fashion advice for crumbs like those.
Yeah. I have to put that on the Instagram, see if we can become influencers.
Wow.
So let's talk about the knight in shining armor that was a dressing gown. He did come bearing gifts, like one of the three wise men, though, didn't he?
He bought all three gifts.
Three essential gifts when you are in a police negotiation, holding yourself hostage after being on the run for killing not only your ex-girlfriend's partner and a police officer. He bought chicken.
He did.
He bought lager and a fishing rod.
And cigarettes.
Oh, yeah, and cigarettes. Sorry, yes, he did.
Fishing rod.
Cigarettes.
That's the one that got me
fishing
the most.
Rod. I know, it was a fishing rod.
Fishing rod. What's he think he's going to do? Sit there and fish while the police have guns at him? He fishes. There's no need to have guns at him.
And if listeners, if you're not familiar with this case, the person that we are talking about is former England footballer Paul Gascoigne, aka Gazza, who famously cried at 94 World Cup, was it?
I don't know.
I don't know
which one it was.
It was one of the early 90s World Cups. But yes, Gazza was going through his own battling his own demons. Yeah, at this
he was going through his own kilo of cocaine.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely hilarious, but at the same time, like,
it's tragic.
It's absolutely tragic.
Although, if you hear him tell the story, it's hilarious.
It is, because he was trying to say that, Raul's my brother. And he was trying to like convince him to give himself up and this, that, and the other. Yeah. And you're just thinking, oh my God, what is he?
Imagine if he had saved the day.
Have you heard Gascoigne tell this story now?
No.
It is hilarious. He's very aware of how stupid it was. And it's,
oh, really? I think he has to be. He knows that, well, he's fully aware of like how the addictions he had and sort of the terrible things he did during that time. So I think the way he handles that and looks back on it, I actually think is admirable.
Check this, right? Yeah. Imagine being so coked up that you drive 4 hours with a chicken curry and a fishing rod to a siege site because you think you'd gone to school with the man in the siege.
Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah, I mean, I know they're both Geordies, but fucking hell.
Yeah. Oh, it turns out he had no ties to him at all.
No connection, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
No. But if you want to hear that story funnily told, listen to Paul Gascoigne telling it now.
Okay.
He's told it on loads of chat shows and stuff. It's fucking hilarious. Yeah.
It's probably better to listen to him now, though, to be fair, because I really, really struggled to understand that at the time, like recordings of him, I was like, you are off your tits, mate. I can't understand what you're saying.
His speech is still quiet.
Mm.
I saw Paul Gascoigne once. So it was actually on my birthday. I'd gone to TGI Fridays in Sutton Coldfield. Yeah, and we'd been for a meal and we came out and we were walking to the car and this massive like people carrier taxi showed up and all these people started getting out and the last person to get out was Gazza with a can of Carling in his hand
in Sutton Coldfield.
Fuck off. Yeah.
What the fuck was he doing in Sutton Coldfield?
I've no idea.
Who knows why he's going anywhere? That's probably where he's stopping off to get his chicken.
But I'm not joking. This taxi was like a clown car. About 20 people got out before him, and he was the last one to get out. And he kind of like fell out, basically.
Wow.
And he just kind of stumbled into TGI Fridays with a can of Carlin in his hand.
I'd be like, I wouldn't expect to see anyone famous getting out of taxi.
Well, no. To be honest, because we were all standing in the car park going, it's fucking Gazza. What's
Gazza? That's insane.
I've only ever seen two famous people in the wild in my life.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. One of them was Robbie from EastEnders. Calm down, I know, it's a big one.
Wow, okay.
He walked past me in London, very short man.
Oh, really?
Well, I'm 5'9", and he was smaller than me.
Wow.
Yeah. And the other one was Jason Mewes, who I sat next to in a pizza restaurant.
What?
Oh.
Yeah, it's not as random as it sounds. It was directly outside of FCC, where he was a guest.
But that's amazing, though.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Jay Mewes.
What makes it even more amazing is it was only me and Duffy, him and his manager in the whole place.
No way.
It was a tiny little pizza takeaway, yeah. And we I was too scared to say anything.
I would be too scared as well. I'd just be like, oh my God, it's Jason Mewes. Oh my God, oh my God. Don't look at him.
They literally sat on the table right next to us. They were here. I could have reached out and touched Jason Mewes. Like this. He was really pissed off about the event.
Really?
Yeah. They were trying to get him to do something extra that wasn't in his contract and they hadn't paid him for. He was not happy about it.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him either.
And they had this, what was obviously some kind of handler there with him, and he was the biggest ass kisser I've ever
heard. Oh, the cringe.
Yeah, it was like a proper Hollywood ass kisser. Sorry, this has gone on a real tangent.
We have got on a real tangent, yeah.
Yeah, he was like, oh, do you know, the pizza came over and Jason Mewes was like, oh, I wanted, he wasn't being a diva or anything, but he was like, oh, no, I didn't want this one. I wanted a different one. And this runner was, oh, take mine, Jason. Take mine. Yeah, I'll take that one. You take this one, Jason. It was fucking sickening.
Oh, wow.
But I didn't say anything, by the way.
I have met another footballer in, of all places, Snobs. I met Gareth Barry in Snobs.
Who Gareth Barry is.
Okay, so Snobs is a rite of passage in on the club scene in Birmingham.
Right. Or at least was.
Or at least was, anyway, not the new one because it's shit.
Yeah.
Not that I've been there for a, quite a while, to be fair, because I'm over 40 now. But yeah, I remember going in there and he just kind of like walked past me and I was like, oh my God, that's Gareth Barry. And I was like, can I get a photo? He's like, yeah. And he's got like a white shirt on and he's clearly like got like a stain on it from like a drink or something. But yeah, Gareth Barry. That's probably the most famous person that I've ever met. Yeah.
I have met Michael Caine.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, wow. Where was that?
Harrods, London.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Danny Welbeck.
Oh, yeah.
In my hotel in Dubai had all the off-season footballers in it.
Ah.
And it also, just to make a girl on holiday in her bikini feel better, had Victoria's Secret models.
Oh, God.
And I was like, great.
Great.
Because this doesn't make me feel gross. But yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sam's met Michael Caine, she just said.
What?
In
that
Harrods.
I'm impressed with. Wow. That's the poshest story ever.
I wasn't in there, but I was outside a couple of years ago, actually. I was walking to, it was Green Park Tube Station, and we were walking past the Ritz in London, and I literally walked smack bang into Jay Rayner, the food critic. It was weird because we were literally me and my friend were literally talking about him about 60 seconds before I walked into him. which was even more bizarre. Yeah.
You summoned him.
Like food critics, the most pointless fucking job on earth.
I guess it's just eat food. I know, yeah. Jay Rayner. Make up stuff about it. Like,
I love Jay Rayner, he's great. Because he's like, I'm like MasterChef and things like that.
I like food, right? But I hate people that refer to themselves as foodies because they're always
Yeah.
So I would love to go do one of those 10-course taster things. I would love to try that. I really would. Because I've never done anything like that in my life. I would love
Are you a fussy eater or anything like that?
No, not at all.
No. Okay.
No, I'll literally eat anything once. I'll try anything once.
Yeah.
I may not carry on eating it. It depends what it is, like mushrooms.
Yeah, Sam's friend's a bit like that. And him and his wife went to Japan a few years ago and he was trying to one-up himself. So he was like pushing himself to try all like the weird things because everything's obviously in Japanese. So he's using Google Translate on his phone to try and find out what things were on the menu.
Oh, God.
And he tried some like really weird shit, like, intestine and things like that. And he said, I did find my limit because there was something that was just called womb.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Non-specific womb.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm out.
Yeah. I said, we eat your haggis.
Well, it's a lung, isn't it? It's sheep's lung.
No, stomach.
Stomach.
Oh, is it stomach?
Yeah.
I like offal. I'm not opposed to offal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, not at all. Ooh. Like liver. I really like liver.
Oh, God, no.
Kidney, like
the smell of that cooking, just
I love it. No. I used to love it. You know, we used to get the giblets in chickens. You don't get it anymore.
I don't think there's a market for it anymore. That's why.
Yeah, fry that up. It's good. You're
supposed to give it the dog, ain't you?
Nah, man, give it to me.
Oh God, I love it how we've gone from football to food.
Jesus Christ, we've gone on one hell of a tangent.
Anyway, we're almost at the end.
We are.
Robert.
Yeah, where we are. Oh, yeah. So, the standoff has been going for 6 hours by this point. Obviously, they didn't let Gazza in. They just got rid of him because he was a crazy person. So, after 6 hours of trying to negotiate, the negotiators were even saying that basically he was impervious to any kind of incentive. There was no talking him out of it. He was clearly set on this path. So they decided the only thing they could do now, aside from stand there until he decided to kill himself, was take some kind of action. So they attempted to use like shotgun style tasers from a distance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 100 feet.
100 feet, yeah.
That's the range on the taser that they were using. And apparently it was some kind of new taser that had gone through a bunch of testing, but hadn't been sort of, it was what's the word? It was unauthorized.
Yeah.
It was unauthorized, the tasers. Which obviously sparked the IPCC inquest afterwards, because they did shoot him, but what one missed and one got him. And then obviously shortly after that happened, he turns the gun on himself. And
So 1:15 a.m. Roel Moat fired the final shot of his rampage straight through his chin and at the top of his head.
Yep. They do rush him to a hospital in Newcastle, but he's pronounced dead.
Yeah, I imagine he was probably already dead.
I would imagine so.
They have to do the official calling of it. I imagine he was probably already dead, though. But not necessarily. I did hear a police officer on another podcast say that actually a surprising amount of people survive shotguns to the head.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's more than you'd think, apparently.
Does it come out the cheek a lot of the time?
Yeah, it tends to blow their face off, because where people tend to like change their mind at the last second, or their body just goes into like flight mode, self-preservation, they kind of move their head back. So it tends to blow their face off. Yeah. Horrific. Mm. But he was laying down anyway, so there was no chance he was going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, incidentally, no pain receptors in your brain.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you just got to get through it going through your chin and face, though, haven't you?
Before. Yeah, so, like, you don't, your brain doesn't have any pain receptors. So, you know, like, people when they have brain surgery and they have to keep them awake and things like that, they don't feel any pain.
Was it a woman played a violin the whole time?
Yeah, you don't feel any pain. I know, it's weird. It's weird.
It's creepy.
I know.
Really? I don't know.
Yeah. And it's like when they like push on certain parts of your brain, ask you questions and like.
What's her name's got that in it? Katie Hopkins. You can feel her brain through a skull.
Oh, no.
Yeah. She's got part of a skull missing.
Yeah.
Was it a brain aneurysm?
Was it?
Yeah, it's like really rare to survive. Or she had a brain tumor, one of the two.
Oh, okay.
I like that. Yeah. What's her face? Amelia Clarke. She had two brain aneurysms during the filming of Game of Thrones, and got part of her brain missing. They had to cut it away.
And it's like super rare to survive one brain aneurysm, let alone
two.
She had two.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. So, sadly, that wasn't the last victim of Moat, because 19 months after the incident on the 29th of February 2012, PC David Rathbone took his own life.
Yeah, he did. He didn't adjust to his...
Nah.
You know, because obviously he was blinded. He didn't adjust to that kind of life very well.
Yeah. I don't think I would.
I don't think I would either.
This is my biggest fear, losing my sight. I'd rather lose my hearing if I had to lose one of them. Yeah, I'd lose hearing over sight. In a split second, it was no decision.
I think a lot of people would probably choose the same. Yeah. But he had an affair, didn't he?
Oh, did he?
Yeah, but he probably sent his mind a bit mental, I'd imagine.
Yeah, there was somebody else who was in who had a similar thing. They lost their sight later on, basically, from an incident, and they kind of bonded, I guess, over. That, and it's something, if you go through something like that, it's going to change you as a person. So the life that you as much as you would want to keep it, you've massively changed as a person. So you're not that person anymore. So it must be hard to sustain your relationship. I'm not advocating cheating affairs at all, but I think it must be hard to sustain relationships afterwards. And he had an affair, but I think he did regret it, because in his suicide note, or I believe it was a note, kind of put like, you know, I lost my job, I lost my sight, I lost my wife, I've lost everything.
Basically. Oh, the job he loved. Yeah, the job he loved. In fact, his fate was almost worse than Christopher Brown's, in a sense.
Yeah. It's tragic that he committed suicide, but I wasn't surprised when I read it.
No, certainly not. On that note, Christopher Brown's mother is she's quite outspoken on the fact that she thinks he's the kind of the lost victim in all this.
Which
is kind of just collateral damage almost.
Well, because everybody just remembers Raoul and obviously the police officer, and Raoul gets, you know, had a lot of support during and still gets a lot of support now. So that must be so horrible, because like I believe people still visit where Raoul committed suicide and leave flowers on the anniversary of his death.
That is
and stuff.
Crazy.
And
that
no, people do not go to Christopher's grave. No one turned up for the funeral. No one's turned up for any of the anniversaries of his death.
That's really sad.
And left no memorial items for him. And yet Raoul gets all of these flowers and plaques and everything.
Yeah. But it's the same thing with, like, I can't stand that, like, hero worshipping of people like this. Like the people, like their obsession with Charles Manson really fucking annoys me. Like Charles Manson was a manipulative psychopath who kill other people. There's nothing glorious about that man. He was 5 foot fucking two, like a little rat bag. There's nothing glorified about that guy. And like there was a big thing in the 90s. You'll probably both remember, but there was a thing in the 90s where people would wear Che Guevara on a t-shirt. And like, Che Guevara's a fucking genocidal mass murderer. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah,
it's strange, isn't it? I don't know. Yeah.
Stop hero worshipping dickheads, for fuck's sake.
I don't know why Raoul got. I don't understand it, but I kind of do want to do at the same time. Like his friends and stuff, and the whole like, oh, if my ex done that to me, I'd do the same, blah, blah, blah. Like people make shitty comments like that. But I just don't understand the popularity and the amount of support that Raoul gets.
It's insane.
From just normal public as such, like going, traveling and leaving flowers at his grave, or many thousands of followers he's got on a support page on Facebook. I don't understand. Like, he didn't do anything
That is mad,
good.
It's crazy.
He didn't do anything good.
No, he didn't do anything good even before all this. No. He was a bully and a fucking... He was just a bully.
I'm wondering, because he was a cop killer, that's where his popularity is.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
That's vile. There was another person who took their life as well, wasn't there, off the back of it?
Oh, was it?
There was. Which is, so this taser, which wasn't like official, that wasn't necessarily supposed to be released, but it was authorised to be used by the chief inspector or chief someone.
Yeah.
But the person that supplied the taser part that
it was
extends,
the company, wasn't it?
He got massive. After being investigated, and he got a massive backlash off the back of it, and I think it basically ruined his career, because they said like he should never have supplied. I'm going to refer to it as a bullet. I don't know what they're called, but he should never have supplied the taser bullet. And he took his life afterwards.
My god! Just seems mad to me that sort of the law almost puts the criminal rights over everybody else's. Oh, you can't infringe on someone's human rights, even though they've just mugged this old lady. But didn't that guy just do that? The law should be harsher.
Yeah, it was because of the inquest about whether the taser was discharged lawfully, and basically he got, like Sam says, he got a load of backlash, and his company went under because of that. Inquest and stuff, and he ended up taking his own life. Like the fallout from just Raoul, it's insane. Yeah. You know, I suppose, you know, even though PC Rathband and the Taser guy taking their own lives, you can directly attribute those deaths to Realmo and what he did. Yeah, so that was the crazy ass story of Realmote. Episode 40. We're back to my choice. We're gonna do one that's semi-popular, I think. There's a podcast about it, there's a documentary about it, and it's the disappearance / murder of Susan Cox Powell.
Oh yeah.
If you remember that one.
Yes.
It's a doozy. It is a doozy of a case, to be fair. And I was obsessed with it for quite a long time.
There's a lot to this one.
And there's a lot to it as well. Could even be a two-parter, I suppose. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes with the research. And yeah, we'll see. So yeah, next episode is going to be episode 40, all about Susan Cox Powell. And on that note, listeners, always remember to delete your Google history.